You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 100 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carzino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Wow.
100 episodes. How about that? I mean, technically it isn't 100 episodes. It's actually 100 weeks because we don't number the one-off episodes. I went through and counted. This is actually our 144th episode.
144 episodes.
Wow.
What an occasion.
What a perfect round number. This is our 100th Peltoncast extravaganza, but there's actually nothing unusual about this week's pod. This is just going to be the regular weekly pod. But stay tuned in your feeds, because later this week, there will be a best of the first 100 episodes, or 144 episodes.
And that's going to be like 5 minutes long?
It's actually, we're just going to play the intro, and it's just going to stop there.
The best of the Peltoncast. Well, I'm honestly looking forward to hearing that myself, to see what the best of is.
There are a shocking number of Jim Mora references in the best of Peltoncast.
The best of Jim Mora. I feel like to celebrate the 100th official episode, I feel like we need to do something special.
Should we do a hat giveaway?
Yeah, we should do a hat giveaway. We should do two hats.
Okay. So why don't people, whether they listen to the best of or not, within the next week, share with us their favorite Peltoncast memories.
And use the hashtag Peltoncast100.
Oh, okay.
That's what we're calling this, Peltoncast. Or Peltoncast144, whichever one you prefer.
Right.
Either one of those. We'll search for both hashtags.
Maybe both.
Tell us your favorite Peltoncast moment, maybe a food that you've eaten because of the Peltoncast, a burger, a burrito, a dumpling, something we should have in the future for a food bracket 2030.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting booked way out at this point. It's like awarding Olympics or World Cups is like how we're doing it.
So do that and we'll give away two hats.
Excellent.
To celebrate. And also, I feel like, again, we've done this occasionally, but we should thank everybody who's listened. All of the listener.
Yeah.
All of the third Pelton brothers. It would be awesome at some point to have, maybe when you do the Peltoncast 100.
A full list of third Pelton brothers.
Of every third Pelton brother.
Okay, that's a good idea.
All the way down from J.J. Redick to...
J.J. Redick still has not been on the podcast.
Well, this is news to me. but a list of everybody who's been a third Pelton brother.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know how you want to do that. You can just figure it out.
Okay. Thanks. What are we drinking to celebrate our 144th episode?
Oh, this is special for the 144th episode. This is the Fremont Parkland Pils. This is the third in their series of spring seasonals. They couldn't come up with one spring seasonal, so they went with three.
All sort of a slightly different theme. Relating to the various parts of, in this case, actually the late winter, but then now into spring.
Here we are. So the final beer in our spring seasonal series is Parkland Pils, a crisp pilsner to welcome the coming sun and warm days. Still excited for this coming sun and warm days.
I'm looking forward to it.
We first brewed this beer to drink after working a shift at the brewery and kept brewing it because, well, we work a lot of shifts and need a lot of beer. And we thought this pilsner was really good, and we brewed some to share with you. Parkland is brewed with German malts and Yakima Valley hops.
Okay. All right. Well, let's crack this open.
Ah. Well, cheers to 144 episodes.
Absolutely. It's been a great run of 144 episodes. While we're on the topic of beer, we should talk about my trip to Spokane this past weekend. So I was there for the NCAA Women's Tournament Regional, the finals of which on Monday night pitted Oregon against Notre Dame, with Notre Dame advancing to the Final Four.
Which was a matchup of bad versus evil.
Heartbreak for Shea Serrano, the diehard Ducks fan for the last 2 weeks here, who saw his team go down. And then kind of instantly adopted at Notre Dame, which was interesting. Anyways, while I was there, I would say we discussed on last week's podcast that I had never really spent any appreciable time in the city of Spokane.
Well, and you were hanging out quite a bit there with your fellow Mount Rainier Ram, Dick Fain, is that right?
I was. In fact, he was over there to call the final for Westwood One. And so we had a lot of MR alumni pride. And we also learned on Twitter last week that loyal listener Dylan is likewise a graduate of Mount Rainier.
Wow.
So We out here.
There are many of you. Also, Brandon Mann, we learned last week on Twitter.
Yeah, it was not as good a week for him because he was the guy who hit Ichiro during a spring training game last week.
Yeah, he's one of you.
He was after me. I take no responsibility. So anyways, I was pleasantly surprised by Spokane. I went in with pretty low expectations in terms of what to expect from food and drink there. But one thing I think I mentioned to you right away is the craft beer culture there was much stronger than I expected.
Okay.
Like pretty much every bar downtown was kind of like advertising the number of taps they had.
Really?
And then like, you know, a variety of both Spokane, you know, area and then even just general Pacific Northwest beers.
Okay.
So I went to a couple of different breweries while I was there. One was the No Lie Brewery, which is probably the most familiar Spokane beer to people in the Seattle area. That's pretty readily available here. We've had that, I think, on the podcast a couple of times. I think the March 4th IPA, we definitely had that.
Really?
Yeah.
That was No Lie, March 4th IPA?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I remember they had like a cherry beer that I've had a few times.
That sounds about right. So that was a really cool space. Went there with Dick and we split a sampler. So got to try a bunch
you
of different...
Split a sampler? The whole sample wasn't enough for you? Sorry. This is more of an off-air complaint bone to pick with you.
I mean, that was the end of the night. We had previously been to Jack and Dan's, the bar near the Gonzaga campus that was famously once owned by John Stockton's father, Jack Stockton. And we're there watching the Utah Jazz game is David Stockton, John's son, made and a Spokane native, made his debut for the Jazz on a 10-day contract.
So wow.
That was quite a moment.
Was there a lot of excitement in the bar?
No one else there was watching.
It was just us. Nobody else cared.
We had to get them to turn on the game.
Okay.
So No Lie, I would recommend if you're there. We also went to a place that I had never heard of called Whistle Punk Brewing that had a pretty cool vibe to it. Did a sampler there as well and tried a bunch of different good beers. Well, I was at Jack and Dan's. I had one of your favorite, I think, breweries, Icicle Brewing in Leavenworth.
Okay, what did you have from them?
They had like a kind of like chocolate cake type beer. It was basically like drinking a dessert after having dinner.
That sounds like Leavenworth.
Yeah, it works out.
I would drink that.
It was good.
I would drink that at the Munchen House.
Yeah.
So you claimed... In our chat with you and me and the famous cousin Katie, you said that you love Spokane now. So much that you're probably going to start calling them your Gonzaga.
I may have been exaggerating when I said that.
You said you love Spokane and Portland. Those are the two cities.
Wait, did I say that?
Yes.
Oh, because I was saying, I was complaining about you saying that you referring to the Blazers as your Blazers.
Something
along
those lines.
And I was saying that I can't really say anything because I love Spokane and Portland.
It's pretty soon you're going to say your Bulldogs. You're this close to it.
I think you'd probably go with your Zags. Bulldogs, I've never liked using that as a term for Gonzaga. Zags is the more appropriate nickname, in my opinion.
Okay, so you love Spokane. Were the tacos good there?
That was an exaggeration. But like I said, my expectations were very low, and they were exceeded. And that was true in terms of food as well. And so it was interesting. We talked last week about the goal of going and trying a variety of different tacos in Spokane or burritos, and it wasn't clear that there was going to be a lot of options necessarily. I mean, we figured there probably would be. It's weird. The one food truck that was recommended to me that was downtown, I went to go walk to it this morning for lunch, and it was not where it was supposed to be.
Uh-oh.
So I don't know what happened there. So I didn't get to that. But conveniently...
It probably drove away. It was a truck.
Conveniently... There's a place, Cochinito Tacos, that had opened within the last few months, like a block away from my hotel.
Interesting. So you had a lot of tacos.
I did. So I tried that on Saturday for lunch. And that's like basically, I would say, like upscale street tacos.
Okay.
Like, you know, and they do other stuff there, but like really high quality meat to in the street taco format.
Okay.
So I would say, I don't know that there's really any comparison for that in the city of Seattle that I know of. I mean, maybe we'll find one in the course of our search for Seattle's best tacos indoor burrito.
Yeah, there must be something. I mean, I guess I don't know what you mean by high quality meat. Like, I consider the Tacos Chuki's meat to be very high quality.
I wouldn't say that it's not high quality, but I'm saying it's like, if it were like an upscale restaurant quality meat
okay.
in a taco. basically.
You know what we don't have on our list? Do we have this, by the way? Is the place that's inside of the Flatstick Pub.
We do not have that on our list.
We should add that. Those are great tacos.
Yeah, that's a good call there.
Okay.
I haven't had them because you've only had them before Seahawks games, and I haven't been there when you've been tailgating. Anyway, so they were pretty good, I would say, you know, very solid. The next day on Sunday for breakfast, I discovered that the place that had been recommended by Third Pelton brother Reese from his visits to Spokane was Chronic Tacos.
I feel like it was like a half-joking recommendation.
He did say, like, I wouldn't recommend any other food in Spokane, I think was his fault. Now, again, Cochinito Tacos.
He doesn't love Spokane as much as you do.
No, very few people do. So they had breakfast tacos on their menu. And there are a few things in life I love more than breakfast tacos, mm-hmm. even more than a breakfast burrito, because, and unfortunately this did not prove the case at Chronic Tacos, but I like the ability to mix and match with different types of breakfast, you know, meats in your breakfast tacos. Now, sadly, they were out of bacon. So my only option then was chorizo.
What time were you there?
I don't know, probably 10:30 or 11.
You just don't run out of bacon.
It was a weird thing to have happen. Especially they did not seem particularly busy. I was the only patron in there when I went. But that's okay, because chorizo...
They may have never had bacon.
Chorizo was the best option. And what was interesting about these tacos is that they were essentially like small unwrapped burritos, because number one, they griddled their tortillas,
okay,
which is something you usually, I think, only see with burritos, not with tacos.
I don't know if that's true.
You think there's places that griddle their tortillas in tacos?
What do you mean by griddle them? Like they're like on like the stove cooking?
Yeah.
Oh, I think that happens.
I don't know, but like cooking long enough that it's a little crispy.
Huh.
I don't recall having had any tacos like that, but which was a nice effect. And then these were like stuffed with potatoes, eggs, and then also the chorizo, and then cheese, and had guac on the top. So
it was like open-faced burrito.
Exactly.
Okay.
And got three of those, which was a very healthy breakfast. And so I would say that, like, in terms of technical quality, Cochinito far superior. But yet, I still enjoyed eating the Chronic Tacos much more.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they were my favorite tacos in Spokane.
It was thanks for the recommendation, Reese. Best taco in Spokane.
Yeah. He wasn't kidding, as it turns out. The last place I went on Monday was Nito Burrito, which serves burritos, mm-hmm. as you might imagine. And they're kind of going for, like, a unorthodox burritos. Like, they have a curry burrito.
Okay.
An Indian curry burrito, and then they also offered a barbecue burrito, which is what I went with.
Ate the barbecue burrito.
I mean, it was basically barbecue sauce in place of salsa, and then they had potatoes in it. And I'm a sucker. This also went for the Chronic Tacos that I had. I'm a sucker for potatoes in a burrito or a taco. Big fan of that.
All right.
I think I like about Tacos Guaymas in Seattle, which is on our list. So... But still, I would say that burrito was only okay because it failed my number one test for a burrito, which is that the ingredients need to be pretty evenly distributed throughout the burrito. I can't have like one bite that's all potato and then one bite that's all, you know, meat or beans or whatever else. Like that's not working for me.
Okay.
So.
Well, that does not sound very neato.
I guess not. So it was third of the three for sure. And sadly, again, did not get to compare tacos El Sol.
So what about the taco that we're officially reviewing this week?
Yeah, let's get into that. So we were doing this week Taqueria La Fondita, which is one of the most highly regarded taco trucks in the Seattle area.
Yes.
And this is in White Center, not far from Boulevard Park, the ancestral home of the Pelton cast.
The center of the universe.
Yeah. So you'd been here before.
Multiple times.
Okay. And I had not. It was my first experience.
Okay. I'm curious what you thought and also what you got.
So I got two adobada tacos and two carnitas tacos.
Okay.
And I would say my review is I thought the carnitas was way better than the adobada.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never had the carnitas.
I really liked it. It was a little crispy and very flavorful.
The meat is so flavorful, right?
I didn't necessarily get that as much from the Autobahn, and maybe that was just by comparison to the carnitas.
Carnitas can be pretty flavorful.
Yeah.
To me, that's what separates this food truck from other food trucks, though. And I feel like maybe I haven't even necessarily done it justice, because it's so hard for me to look at the menu and see that they have a $2 burrito and not order the $2 burrito.
Okay, so what's the deal with the $2 burrito? I did not get that. How is it a full-size burrito?
It's like very dense. I mean, maybe not a full-size burrito, but it's like, I don't know, the burrito size. Uh-huh. It's not huge, but it's $2 fucking. Like,
yeah, that's so I figured, I didn't know what to think, because they also have like a burrito plate on the menu.
So I think
that is normally priced.
I honestly might not even be doing it justice, the taco truck, right? Because I'm getting this $2 burrito basically every time, because how can I resist? Because they have that burrito plate, which is like $7.50, and I'm like, okay, if I'm getting this, I can get 4 burritos.
That math does not check out.
More or less.
It's close. It's close.
I'm rounding a little bit here. But I think they probably don't put as much meat in the special burrito. It's rice, refried beans, meat, and then kind of like a pico style.
Uh-huh.
It's excellent, though. Every single bite explodes with flavor. Like a little bit of salsa, and it's perfect.
So you're getting the autobada?
I'm getting the autobada, and then also Mrs. Fantasy Genius got the carne asada.
Okay.
Which is $1 more. That's $3 if you want the carne asada.
Oh, wow. If you're Mr. Moneybags over here, getting the $3 burrito.
Look, if you go for 2 of those, that's the same price as a 3rd burrito. I mean, come on.
That math does check out.
So I feel like I might even like it more if I was getting the full-size burrito. I thought about it, and I just could not bring myself to doing it. I wanted to kind of have the order that I would normally have there.
So I think one thing that probably impacts my rating for Taqueria La Fundita is the fact that the only time I could go there because of this trip to Spokane was Thursday for lunch, when it was pouring rain.
Oh my God.
Very cold and windy. It was not a great experience waiting for the tacos.
Oh no. What do you think about that corn place next door?
I'm not a big elote guy. I don't know.
In the past, I've never seen people there. This time, there was nobody at the taco truck and a huge line for corn.
Interesting. There was a couple people that ordered there maybe when I was there at lunch on Thursday. Yeah, so I feel like if we went back, I might even have a higher grade for it. But right now, I'm probably at an 87.
I was getting even an 88.
Okay. We're in the same ballpark here.
As far as taco trucks go, I think it's probably the best taco truck that I've ever had in Washington State, though.
Okay. I mean, I guess it's probably better than the South Park taco truck.
Oh, it's significantly better to me than the South Park taco truck.
To me, the difference wasn't significant.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you didn't have the burrito. That's the thing. The tacos are more or less just street tacos.
Why didn't you just tell me this before I went?
I thought you knew how to order at a restaurant. Do I have to tell you what to get every single place you go to?
You should have told me what to get at all these places in Spokane that you've never been to.
I've never been to.
I'll just text you.
It's like a burrito, but open.
I'll send you a photo.
Then
we'd
have a discussion about whether tacos are actually just open burritos.
Oh no, that's oh no, you that mind blown gift. No.
Anyway, I didn't realize that I needed to instruct you what to get on the menu. You can look at it and see there's a $2 burrito and know that you're supposed to order that.
I suppose that's fair.
Yeah. Or you get a larger burrito. So I thought about doing the larger burrito, and next time I go back, I'm going to.
All right.
Well, I'm going to suck it up and spend the $7.50 for the burrito.
Wow.
Just this one. So I got 3 burritos. The other thing is,
guess the kids won't be getting anything for Christmas this year.
They're getting burritos.
No,
they get the $2 one. The next day, so I saved one of the burritos. Mm. So good the next day. I had this idea.
I hadn't even been considered ready on the second day because I've never.
It's like, you know our side pod, right? They're on episode, I think, 150 of Trader Bros.
Yeah.
I eat a lot of Trader Joe's frozen burritos.
Obviously.
If I can get these for $2, the price point is not all that dissimilar than like a Trader Joe's frozen burrito.
Hmm.
It's cheaper than like if you're getting like the fancy like frozen burritos, your organic frozen burritos individually packed from the grocery store. This is a cheaper price point than that. You could go, hypothetically, and get 10 special burritos from Taqueria La Fundita and then eat those for every single meal, like lunch for the week.
I really had not considered that possibility.
It's like borderline sneak, is what I'm saying. It is so cheap, it makes more sense to get these burritos than to cook at home.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's so cheap, you're losing money if you don't.
Yes. And it's funny, I see other people going up and ordering, and I'm just like, my mind is blown whenever I see people not getting the $2 burrito. Because you just don't go to a taco truck and see a $2 burrito. They also have five tacos for $7.
That is accurate.
And I ate five tacos.
Nice.
I ate a lot. I had two of the burritos, and I think I had four tacos. So, all right. Not the best burritos in Seattle, but still very good.
All right, where are we going to go next week?
I want to go to Taco Street next week. This is a relatively new place. It's right off the Othello light rail stop. You can see it from the Othello station. And I've been there a couple times. I've never actually eaten there, which I think I want to do, rather than taking it home. But I've enjoyed it every time. They have at least one very hot salsa, which I like.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm interested to try that.
So it's fairly highly reviewed. I'm excited to go back and eat it with a more critical mind.
Right. All right. Should we talk about something else that happened over the weekend while I was in Spokane?
We should have a toast to something else that happened over the weekend while you were in Spokane.
All right. That's fair. Let's refill on beer here. To Markelle Fultz playing a basketball game. What an amazing concept.
Wow. For our 100th episode.
Yes. Just he was inspired.
He was either waiting for the 100th episode or waiting for the Husky season to end.
Could be either way.
Too consumed by the Husky season. Had to get back out there after. But so did you get to watch this game?
No.
Have you watched? There have been so many cut-ups online, GIFs on the Reddit NBA page. Like every single shot that he took. Maybe every shot he made was like on the top. People are excited about this.
Yeah. It was an interesting experience because, like, particularly during the first half, I'm like seeing these gushing Markelle Fultz takes, and I'm like, he's one of four from the field. Like, the three assists were nice, but, like, you know, let's slow down a little bit. But then in the second half, he had the statistical production to go with, you know, kind of what everyone was seeing qualitatively.
So how would you rate this game? Because I feel like it needs to be rated as a player's first game ever. You know, like the stakes, people are treating Markelle Fultz like he should have had this amazing game. Most players are not that good in their first ever NBA game.
I don't know that people are treating him as if he should have this amazing game. I mean, I think a lot of the takes were as positive as they were because of the fact that people were just, you know, their expectations were so low, and B, they were so happy to see him out there playing basketball again after we were uncertain when that would ever happen.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, it's got to be relative to the minutes played. The fact that he put up 10 points and 8 assists in 15 minutes is pretty impressive.
8 assists in 15 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this granted in semi-garbage time against a Nuggets defense that is not great, suboptimal. But still, I mean, compared to what we saw early in the season when Fultz, you know, he was able to get to the basket at times but couldn't really finish because of the fact that there was no threat of him shooting off the dribble, like a huge step forward from that.
So he played earlier in the year?
He played 3 games, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is like his real first game to me.
You're just not even counting those games?
No, I don't count those.
All right. I mean, fair enough.
But does this change the, like, because I feel like the window for Markelle Fultz's success was shrinking given the more time that he was out. Does this one game change anything for you, or is it too small of a sample size?
It moves the needle in a positive direction. I mean, to see him make a pull-up jumper was encouraging. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was all positive. I don't think you should, like, everything is solved now. I think would be an overreaction, but you know, we're going to continue to watch how he does, but definitely a positive step.
Well, it's also just nice that he got it in this year, so he doesn't have to go the entire off season with like the weight of playing basketball.
Absolutely. And the other interesting thing was to do this in the middle of a playoff race for the Sixers, who are trying, they have a chance at the third seed in the Eastern Conference. I believe with Cleveland losing tonight, you know, they're right there in the mix.
Wow.
With them in Indiana, those three teams. And who would have imagined saying that before the season, that Cleveland and Philly are neck and neck in terms of playoff positioning? Yeah, they're half game back now, even in the loss column with Cleveland.
Well, that was awesome to see. And like the first jump shot that he made, or when I was like looking at the highlights of it, it's almost like you can just exhale.
Right.
You know? And I feel like Markelle must feel that same way.
You know who else could exhale?
Speaking of the third seed,
your Blazers with a pair of tense victories in the past 3 days.
I was getting nervous. I thought maybe the Blazers had lost some of their magic, because you still, this run has been so unexpected that it feels like somebody's just going to take it away at any time.
The way I always think of it is like the cartoon where the character has run off the cliff but hasn't looked down and doesn't realize they're off the cliff yet. Mm-hmm. Like, did the Blazers look down? And that's when you know, when they lost to Houston, they looked down, and then they ended up losing to the Celtics as well without Kyrie.
Those weren't terrible losses.
The Celtics loss was a bad loss. The Rockets loss wasn't a bad loss.
That was one where I'm like, oh my God, the Blazers have lost it.
Right. I mean, that was
the magic is gone. Dame's bad now. There's no Lillard time.
But Sunday, a battle for the Pacific Northwest. The Blazers against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Were you watching this one in Utah?
I was not in Utah.
Sorry. Same thing. Were you watching this one in Spokane?
So what I discovered in trying to look for a bar to watch this game is that Spokane actually is Utah territory. Like, the Jazz are the home team in the market there. So you can only get Blazers games, even though they have Comcast Sports or NBC Sports Northwest, you can only get the games on League Pass. And I don't think there are many Spokane bars that have
Jack and Diane's doesn't have League Pass.
They actually might, but they weren't downtown, so I was not able to watch it at that point. But I did pull it up at dinner on my phone and watched the end of it.
Were you alone at dinner? Were you with people?
I was with Dick Fan.
He was probably okay with that.
Yeah.
Wait, is Spokane the Jazz market because John Stockton?
I mean, I think that's got to be a factor in it. No, the Spokane also includes parts of Idaho, and Idaho is getting pretty close to, relatively close to Utah. So I don't know if that math holds there. Idaho does, in fact, border Utah. Okay, that checks out.
That is pretty far, though. When you look at that, Portland's hell of a lot closer.
I know that is absolutely true. So. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know who we would ask to contact to ask about that.
We're going to have to do a full investigative research.
That's really what we do here on the Pelton.
So you were able to watch this game at dinner, though?
Well, I watched the last minute and a half.
I thought that, which was a very tense minute and a half.
It was.
There were moments where it looked like the Blazers were going to lose this game at the end. CJ pulling them out. CJ and Nurkic, and I feel like in this little stretch, have kind of been carrying the team.
I mean, everybody's had their moments. I mean, Aminu and Harkless, who now is undergoing arthroscopic knee surgery to remove a loose body from his knee. So we'll see after
almost
that happens.
Almost as important as the Steph Curry injury.
Yes, very, very similar magnitude. We'll see what a timetable is after that. He said he'd heard as short as 10 days, as long as 6 weeks, which the 6 weeks would be bad. 10 days would put him back in time for the playoffs. But yeah, you're right. Nurkic and McCollum in that game were especially crucial.
So this win on Sunday that they had, I mean, just for so many different reasons for us, the magnitude is quite high. For us, I mean the Blazers.
well, also fans of not the Sonics, is it enhances Portland's chances of holding off Oklahoma City for the three seed and pushing Oklahoma City at least down to four. I mean, they were going into Tuesday night in a three-way tie in the loss column with New Orleans and San Antonio. Both of those teams lost Tuesday night, including the Pelicans losing to the Blazers in yet another thriller. This time it was Dame Lillard and Nurkic who were delivering the heroics in the fourth quarter. So that win, in combination with the Oklahoma City one, now the Blazers three games up on the loss column over Oklahoma City, 2.5 overall now with 8 games to play. So they're looking pretty good.
They just need a couple more wins.
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, the Oklahoma City win. Just like, there have been big games that the Blazers and the Thunder have played with each other. To me, this was probably the biggest one because I've been such a lifelong Blazers fan. But really, the where the teams sit with each other in the Western Conference, this was magnitude-wise so important for the Blazers. And this is the game that they've played when the Blazers have been the best team.
I don't know if that's necessarily true.
This is the best position that the Blazers have been in my time as a Blazers fan.
Better than the best Roy era teams or the 2000...
Did they finish in the three seed then?
I mean, they had home court advantage against Houston that first year.
Especially in a Western Conference that is as stacked as this Western Conference.
All right, I'm going to go need to look this up now to prove you're wrong.
This feels like a team that has a chance of pushing some teams in the playoffs. And it felt like during the Roy era teams, they never really had a chance in the playoffs.
I guess the Blazers technically got the fourth seed in 2009, but they won 54 games and were tied for second in the West that year.
Okay, that was a good team.
Granted, the Lakers were 11 games games ahead of anyone else in the West that year, but then the Rockets might end up that far ahead of anyone this year.
Okay, I'm not crazy enough to think that the Blazers can really push the Rockets, and I have a question about this to ask you in 1 second, but I just want to say, this game, these two teams fighting with each other for positioning, we want the Thunder out in the first round. We don't want the Thunder to get to the second round to start pushing teams, things to get scary. We want them out in the first round and Paul George gone to LA as fast as possible.
Okay.
There was a skirmish in this game.
I mean, these two teams have had a heated rivalry. There was, you know, Nurkic and Westbrook getting into it after Nurkic kind of knocked over Steven Adams in the most recent matchup in Portland. So it'd be an entertaining first round series if that did come to pass.
Just
which
whenever
is possible.
They fight, I see the Blazers fighting for the city of Seattle.
Like I've always said, Portland fighting for Seattle's honor.
I know it's an insane thing, but that's what you see when they're fighting. Okay, so my question for you is how crazy am I? How crazy am I to think that if the Blazers played the Warriors in the second round, 2-3 series, Steph Curry's maybe still injured, maybe first game's back from injury. How crazy am I to think that the Blazers would have, say, a 50-50 shot in the series?
Pretty crazy. I mean, first off, you know, Golden State would have home court advantage in that series. Second off, it's not like the Warriors haven't played the Blazers at less than full strength in the past. Like last year's first round series, KD missed multiple games. The year before that, when they played in the second round, Steph missed the first three games of that series with the Warriors leading 2-1. And what particularly stands out is that at no point, you know, have, no matter who's been missing for the Warriors, have the Blazers really been able to win at Oracle Arena. And, you know, technically speaking, if you're going to win that series as the lower speeded team, you are going to have to win on the road at some point. So
just one game. That's all they need is one game.
Yeah.
Blazers in six is what you mean.
I mean, that's not as crazy as Bucks in six, but I'm still not sure I would go with it here. Let's see here. When was the last time the Blazers won in Golden State? It looks like it was November 2013.
We're trying to get the spirit of 2013 alive.
Who played in that game for the Warriors?
For a Peltoncast hat.
Would you like to know who started for the Warriors in this game?
Who started for the Warriors in that game?
Harrison Barnes, of course. Andrew Bogut.
Okay.
And David Lee. And then the Splash Brothers.
That's not that bad of a team.
Nemanja Nedović played 13 minutes off the bench for the Warriors.
So they have players on their
team
now.
Nearly as many minutes.
You're just like...
Is Draymond Green.
For a Peltoncast hat. Hashtag Spirit of 77 on Twitter.
No. Shutting that all down. No. The 79 Sonics are the only Wally Walker championship team we are going to recognize.
Wally Walker was on this team?
Yeah.
Oh, we have to have Wally on the pod to talk about the 77 championship.
Talk about his Blazers.
Third brother Wally Walker. Just act like he never played. It was never affiliated with the Sonics.
No.
We'll just talk about his Blazer days.
This has gone too far.
Oh my God.
Again, this is a bridge too far, good sir.
Okay. Hashtag Spirit of 77 on Twitter. Nope. I'll make sure you get it. I'll send you my hat. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about Seattle Arena news so we can think about the city of Seattle getting an NBA team back.
By the time that we're doing our search for Seattle's best sandwich, maybe there'll be a team. Summer 2035.
Over the weekend, the Oakview Group held an arena open house on the Seattle Center grounds. Not sure that there was any necessarily big takeaways from this, but also in conjunction with that, they launched a survey to ask about the use of Seattle Center campus and a rebuilt arena. I tweeted that from the Peltoncast. It's also linked in the post notes. I suggest everyone go fill that out to kind of, you know, guide Oakview in their planning efforts and make this the best arena that it can.
It was an open house of Key Arena?
Not of Key Arena.
What was an open house of then?
Like to look at drawings, renderings, and, you know, design, stuff like that.
I'm skeptical about the term open house.
I mean, like, people could come in and do it.
Okay, fine.
I don't know what you're looking for here. It's not like, that wasn't like a tour.
I thought they were
the
showing Key Arena,
and
they're like, here's the Macklemore banner.
Did I mention that's still in there?
Oh, yeah.
I confirmed that at the Pac-12 tournament. All right, so I think that's it on the arena front this week. Let's move on to the Sounders, coming off the international break last weekend and a much-needed one given their injury situation. So the news getting a little bit better. The Sounders should get Will Bruin back from the concussion he suffered and then Nicola Ladero back from the midfoot sprain that sidelined him in their loss to FC Dallas in their most recent match. The bad news is that Clint Dempsey is on red card suspension this weekend as the Sounders host the Montreal Impact on Saturday, and that Osvaldo Alonso and Victor Rodriguez, midfielders, both remain out with their injuries. But the Sounders, Brian Schmetzer told reporters that all the players who were on international duty over this weekend expected to be available for Saturday's game. Montreal, with a new manager, Rémi Gard, most recently seen leading Aston Villa from 20th in the English Premier League table to 20th.
they didn't get demoted when they were 20th?
I think they eventually did get relegated. Was not around by the time that happened. He had already completed his brief sojourn in Aston Villa. Formerly had managed Lyon in France, which was the team for which he primarily played as a player. The Impact, like the Sounders, started the season with two losses before knocking off their arch rival, Toronto FC, last weekend. They come in ranked 15th in the 538 Soccer Power Index. So the Sounders at home, despite their struggles recently, still heavily favored in this match.
So very nice for the Quebecois.
Yeah. A shout out while we're here to the Seattle Reign FC, who beat the Washington Spirit 2-1 in their season opener on Saturday at Memorial Stadium. Megan Rapinoe with a goal and assist in that one, winning NWSL Player of the Week honors.
Supposedly, I think this game was on TV, but the screen was really dark. Did you see these tweets about this?
No, I did not see that.
It was like so dark that you couldn't even see. Megan Rapinoe scored this goal on a free kick. I'm down with the Seattle Reign. They're playing at Memorial Stadium. I can get behind everything going on here.
Yeah, I was very excited. There were rumors that they were going to get U.S. international Kristen Press in a trade. That has not yet come to fruition. I don't know if that's still on the table, but I was behind that.
So have the Sounders scored a goal in MLS play?
No.
I'm calling it right here, scoring a goal.
Hashtag make regression to the mean. Work for you.
And then also some big news in the MLS this week.
Zlatan?
The Zlatan news.
Yeah, coming to the LA Galaxy as a designated player. I'm excited to do it. I would go to a Galaxy game to see Zlatan.
I mean, it's going to be pretty fun when they play the Sounders.
He is definitely in the
Chad Marshall
against Zlatan. He is in the classic elephant graveyard stage of his career, but then he was pretty amazing for Man U before his injury, so he's maybe he isn't.
Not that bad.
Yeah.
Like, of the caliber of aged player who's come to the MLS, I feel like he's at the higher end. This is not Drogba playing for the Impact.
I mean, Drogba was pretty good when he was actually willing to play because they were not turf.
He wouldn't play on turf.
No.
Oh, man.
I mean, with all due respect to one of our favorite soccer players of all time, I think of Pirlo pretty high in the list of players who came after they were incapable of contributing.
You think he was good?
No, I think Pirlo was bad.
No, he was bad. But do you think that
he didn't like running? That was not a favorite of his.
He didn't like running when he was playing in Italy.
I mean, that's true.
He's playing in a World Cup, not liking running.
It's all
but
true.
Do you think this makes the Sounders feel like they need to, like, do they look at this and say to themselves, we need to make a splash here?
I don't think so. I don't think that's how they operate. I mean, obviously Dempsey was a huge splash, but you look at their other DP signings, you know, maybe going, you know, since the very early days, and why can't I remember the Swedish striker or midfielder that they had, I should say.
Freddie Lundberg.
Yes, I knew Freddie. I could not come up with his last name. Like, since him, I don't feel like...
What a splash Freddie Lundberg was.
He was.
Putting butts in seats.
But, like, you know, the best players they've gotten as DPs haven't necessarily been huge names. I mean, Nicola Ladero wasn't a household name before he came over. He's just really good at soccer and in the prime of his career. So I think they're going to continue with that model more than...
You don't think this changes anything for them?
I don't think so. I mean, first off, it's not like they need to try to sell tickets. They're doing just fine there.
Do the Galaxy?
Not necessarily, but I think there is more need to compete in terms of star power when you're in the LA market than there is in Seattle. And especially now that they're competing with LAFC in that market.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I think different philosophies. And it's not like the Sounders' strategy hasn't been working. They've played in the MLS Cup final 2 years in a row. Like, they just need to, like, maybe try to score a few goals early in the season.
They need to score a goal.
Just a little bit better.
I'm telling you, it's happening. Season. It's happening this weekend.
Well, speaking of opening the season, Tuesday was the final game of spring training for the Mariners, who opened the season on Thursday night on ESPN against the Cleveland Indians with Felix Hernandez on the mound for his 11th opening day start as a Mariner. And you know what this means? It's not just time for the return of the Mariners. It's also time for the return of your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you. As we head into the 2018 Mariners season, bear with me because this is long. The theme is slightly better. FanGraphs projects the Mariners to win 78 games, and all they need to be is slightly better than that. To recap the offseason, they went to war hard, like John Bolton was their GM, for Shohei Ohtani, and struck out there, losing him as both a pitcher and a hitter. As far as I understand from fantasy, he's two different people. But in free agency, they were pacifists. And after a couple of solid trades, ended up with Mike Leake, D. Gordon, and Ryan Healy. They ended up slightly better.
Okay.
Offensively, Kyle Seager is going to make regression to the mean work for him.
I like it.
In 2017, he had the worst batting average on balls in play in his career, and that should definitely turn around in 2018. The rest of the lineup is not a murderer's row, but let's say a manslaughterer's row of hitters all worth around two wins, like Cano, Cruz, Segura, new leadoff hitter, and new center fielder D. Gordon, Mike Zunino, and my boy, Mitch Haniger.
I didn't know you had such strong feelings about Mitch Haniger.
Oh, all Mitch needs to be is slightly better than last year. He's a five-win player. On the mound, the Al Pastor to my taco. The best player on the team by far. He doesn't need to be slightly better. James Paxton, just slightly healthier, and he'll cruise his way to another Cy Young Award. I've awarded him some in my mind.
Retroactively.
The rest of the rotation exists. The Mariners saw fit to not upgrade the back end of their rotation this offseason because
reasons.
But hey, the bullpen should be good. Having a good bullpen, as far as I understand, is like having a pretty good NFL run game. They don't matter, but Joe Buck sure loves them.
I don't know if that quite checks out.
Chasing the Astros for the AL West would be like racing Mike Vick outside the club. You just don't do it. Just try to sneak in. 85 wins, Minnesota Twins, just slightly better. And this kind of has to be the season that they sneak in. If they don't make the playoffs this year, get ready for another decade of rebuilding before a Mariners playoff run. 10 years! The Mariners gutted their farm system so much in the past year, you'd think it colluded with Russia.
No.
Nelson Cruz is a free agent. They'll be saddled with $27 million to Felix and Robinson Cano's age 36 to 40-year-old seasons. So gear up now, because the Mariners' future beyond this year looks about as bleak as the Seahawks secondary without Earl Thomas.
Wow. That was you set the bar high for this season. That was a tour de force. I considered putting together some hot takes based on the Mariners signing Jason Worth, who is about to turn 39.
Pun takes, you mean?
No, there were some worthless takes in there, puns in there, to go along with 44-year-old Ichiro. And there was some sort of elaborate metaphor about how they were going to try to play in a baseball version of the Big Three. Like, you needed washed-up players.
I think Ichiro might have done that during the offseason.
Check out the Wright Thompson feature.
I forgot to mention Ichiro during this whole thing.
He exists. Yeah, so I look forward to these hot takes, like, violently swinging between wildly optimistic proclamations that the Mariners are about to win the World Series to pessimistic takes that they should begin the process. Just back and forth throughout the season. It should be a lot of fun.
We'd also be happy, this being our 100th episode, not spectacular, but if there are any third Pelton brothers out there, future third Pelton brothers, who feel like they have Mariners takes to deliver, we would love to have them.
Because it's so hard for you to come up with them each week.
No, it's just fun to have takes.
It's true.
It's a long baseball season.
It's very, not as long as the MLS season, but long nonetheless.
Not as long timeline-wise as the MLS season, but somehow longer.
All right, let's talk UW sports. And let's start with the good news that UW softball swept a three-game series with number 9 Arizona at Husky Softball Stadium last weekend by a combined 4 runs, 2 of those games in extra innings. But that's good enough to keep them at number 1 in the country.
There we go.
They will be,
Hashtag softball school.
Yep. They will be at Stanford this weekend looking to continue their solid run so far. Obviously, you have men's basketball coach Mike Hopkins is staying put.
Who called it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that surprising that he was staying put, but any questions now put to bed is Pitt has hired Jeff Capel as their coach, and Hopkins, in his season-ending press conference last week, reiterated how happy he is at UW and that he's not interested in any other jobs, and we'll see how long that lasts, but for now, certainly true. UW announced Tuesday that Carlos Johnson will transfer. That's no surprise. We talked about that as a likely possibility on last week's pod.
I'll give you as calling that one. You probably called that one in like November.
That was maybe not until January. Batumba Baruti, if he transfers, I'll have called that in November. Husky spring practice football starts Wednesday, probably today as you're listening to this, leading up to the spring scrimmage on April 21st. So we'll see what happens there. I don't think a ton of drama. It's not like any key positions are really that open going into the season. Certainly not on offense, but... you know, it's always entertaining to see, you know, sort of who's stepping forward, who's developing, and then the first look for everyone at the true freshman quarterbacks who will be competing for a chance to presumably back up Jake Browning this season.
Well, and also Jacob Sermon, will he be there?
He'll be there, yeah.
Sorry, not Jacob Sermon, Jacob Eason.
Yes.
There's a lot of Jakes.
There are entirely too many.
A lot of Jakes in the quarterback room.
Yes.
Jacob Sermon will be there too.
He will also be there. Eason will be, even though he's not eligible. And
he's redshirting for the year.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, all right, let's wrap up with the Seahawks. Do we want to start out by talking about the Trevon Boykin news, or do we want to start out with free agency?
Or the Michael Bennett news?
not
a lot of great news across the board. Let's talk about Trevon Boykin first, though.
Yeah, as you said, not great news. He was accused of domestic assault by his girlfriend, Shabrika Bailey, who told Dallas TV station WFAA that Boykin choked her last week, and she was hospitalized with injuries from the incident, including fractures of her jaw on both sides. This was a horrifying story to read and to see the photos of the aftermath here. But, you know, I think perhaps as notable was that Shabrika Bailey also said that the car accident last year where Boykin was arrested in conjunction with this in last March was caused at that time by Boykin choking her, and that she didn't come forward at that point because she was covering for him at his request to keep from damaging his NFL career. And lo and behold, unsurprisingly, very shortly after this news came out this morning, the Seahawks released Boykin. So he issued a statement saying, "I understand the Seahawks' decision to release me. The story that was reported casts a bad light on the organization and on me. I want to be clear that the story is false. The police have taken statements from the accuser, another witness, and me. All of those statements confirm that I was not involved in the physical altercation. The woman has lied about me and has cost me my job. I know guilt by association is real. This person has fabricated a story, and I am suffering the consequences. I will let the legal system run its course, and I know I will be vindicated." So that statement is not great in terms of expressing any sort of empathy towards the victim here, which is an important feature, you know, an important thing to, I think, demonstrate at this point, we've realized. But I thought it was interesting. This sort of speaks to a broader issue that we discussed with Mina Kimes on the Pelton Cast last fall, where, you know, teams taking a harder stance against domestic violence, is admirable as that is, and certainly I have no issue with the Seahawks releasing Boykin, but it's sort of got this unintended consequence of sometimes making it more difficult for the victim to come forward because of fear of what it's going to do to a player's career.
Okay. I still think the Seahawks made the right call here.
No, I'm not criticizing. It's just that
swift response.
It's a very difficult situation to figure out exactly what's going to be best for victims here, which, you know, should be our primary concern, I think. So, you know, I certainly, you know, feel terribly for Shabrika Bailey for what she went through, and, you know, it took a tremendous amount of courage for her to come forward, you know, and make these allegations public. So kudos to her for that. From a football standpoint here, the implication is the Seahawks, with Austin Davis unsigned, no longer have a backup quarterback to Russell Wilson on the roster for next season. The expectation has been that they would end up re-signing Davis, who's an unrestricted free agent, given his track record playing for Brian Schottenheimer with the Rams in the past. An interesting report from Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times on Tuesday night that Mark Sanchez could be a possible option at backup QB. Obviously, Sanchez played for Pete Carroll at USC and then also started his NFL career playing for Schottenheimer as the offensive coordinator with the Jets. He spent last season as a third stringer in Chicago, not seeing any action. So a similar role to the one he'd play here, barring injury.
All right.
So
it's funny how strongly people care about the backup quarterback situation.
Yes. I mean,
especially when it's a player like Mark Sanchez, the takes are hot.
Oh, the takes are irredeemably hot.
It's like, this is a player who hopefully will never play.
I mean, I will say from a football standpoint, there is very little justifiable argument that Mark Sanchez is a better quarterback than Colin Kaepernick. Like, Kaepernick.
I mean, when then is your argument between the two, but is he a better quarterback than Trevon Boykin?
Right. That's a or like, Austin I mean, Davis.
We could compare a lot of people to Colin Kaepernick.
I mean, the Seahawks should sign out Colin Kaepernick. Like,
and they're about a year too late. But yes, I mean, I agree. The Seahawks
should sign out there.
Colin Kaepernick.
So nothing. They haven't lost the opportunity. It's still out there. They should do it.
But I agree. The Seahawks should sign Colin Kaepernick.
So who did they sign over the past week? A number of players. Enough to lose all their compensatory draft picks.
Why do they do it by amount of players signed?
Why does the NFL do something backwards? That's your question here. This is where you're starting. All right, so after losing Sheldon Richardson to the Vikings, the Seahawks countered by going to the Vikings and taking away two of their defensive tackles.
There we go.
Tom Johnson signing a one-year contract for a reported $2.4 million, although if our experience with other Seahawks is any indication, very likely not all of that is guaranteed. Some of that will be incentive-based. And a small amount guaranteed in terms of the signing bonus. Johnson is age 33, started 15 games last season, and had two sacks as compared to one for Sheldon Richardson. Mm-hmm. Also, his third Pelton brother Ben B pointed out on Twitter, the Football Outsiders charting had Johnson with more pressures, which are a better predictor of sacks going forward than Richardson, 23 to 16. So I don't think that this necessarily makes the case that Tom Johnson is a better player than
better
Sheldon
player than Sheldon Richardson.
But I think it does make the case that the difference between them is not as great as the almost five times difference in terms of salary would it suggest.
This is a great signing.
There's a lot to like here.
For 1 year, $2.4 million? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The difference between that kind of commitment and what you'd have to give to Sheldon Richardson, like the thing about Sheldon Richardson is there's still a lot of hype there and not necessarily that much on the field. Richardson is a bad player? No.
There was that much on the field in New York.
It's been 2 years.
I mean, he had a lot of pressures his last season in New York, which is why we expected him to regress to the mean this year. I mean, I think then the change in schemes from, you know, playing defensive end or even outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme to defensive tackle in a 4-3 scheme was a factor in that.
This is a Seahawks defensive line signing, right? The Seahawks have not in the past, the defensive line that we knew and loved that led them to a Super Bowl was not full of high-priced players. It wasn't full of players that you traded second-round picks for, right?
Yeah.
It was a working-class defensive line got pressure.
I mean, Bennett and Averill, although they were cheap signings, they were still players with pretty good pedigree. But, you know, I mean,
Tom Johnson has pretty good pedigree.
Not to their caliber, though. The other Vikings defensive tackle coming over.
The other issue is that he's much older.
Yeah. The other Vikings defensive tackle coming over from Minnesota was Shamar Stephen, who started all 16 games in 2016, but just one game last season when he played 38.5% of snaps as a member of the rotation up front, but not a key member. By contrast, Johnson played 67.6% of the Vikings snaps, and Sheldon Richardson was at 59.4% of the Seahawks defensive snaps. Stephen coming off a torn meniscus he suffered during the Vikings playoff run, but according to Tom Pelissero of NFL Network, should be back for OTAs. So he's more of the classic run-stuffing defensive lineman and probably came even cheaper than Tom Johnson.
Yeah, a depth defensive lineman.
Yeah. The Seahawks also re-signing a couple of their own players last week, running back Mike Davis, who the
team... Before we talk about that, I want to talk about DJ Fluker. We talked about him last week as far as a player. But this contract, $1.5 million 1 year, how do you not like that?
Yeah, it changes the situation pretty dramatically. The commitment is not to him as like a key starter, even though Pete Carroll talked about him, I think, as if he's probably going to start at right guard next to Jermaine Ifedi. But if it doesn't work out, they can get out of this contract very easily.
It's nothing. This is not Luke Jokel money. No. And the production should be equal to what they got from Luke Jokel.
I don't know if I would necessarily agree with that. But I don't think, again, is the difference five times?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Well, at the very least, this is an experienced NFL offensive lineman.
But also the way the contract is structured gives them the reasonable ability to, I mean, I guess you'd probably not, I don't know if you'd necessarily cut him in season is likely. It'd be probably more if something went wrong in training camp, since his salary, I think, would guarantee at the if he's on the roster for week one. But, you know, you could potentially cut him and then get ahead in that comp pick formula if that's the difference in terms of getting a fourth round pick. So that's an interesting possibility. Anyway, the Seahawks re-signing Mike Davis, who they declined to tender as a restricted free agent because that would have guaranteed him, I believe, $1.9 million, instead signing him to a one-year deal for $1.35 million with just $350,000 of that guaranteed and an $800,000 base salary. I thought it was interesting that Pete Carroll said at the NFL owners meetings that he will start practice as their lead running back. Although, you know, he was basically like, that's just going to matter the first handoff, basically.
Yeah, whatever that means. I mean, who started as the lead running back this
last
season?
Year?
Yeah. Rawls, Eddie
either
Lacy.
Rawls or Lacy. Yeah, and neither of them stayed long in that role.
And we also don't know what's going to happen. The Seahawks are going to draft a running back.
It's a guarantee.
The Seahawks are going to draft a running back, and probably earlier than we want them to.
Yeah, probably. Chris Carson, good news. He's healthy at this point, coming back from his injury.
Should be. So. Pete kept teasing that he was going to play in the regular season.
Right.
He better be healthy by now.
Then the Seahawks also re-signing defensive end Marcus Smith to a one-year two-point deal worth up to $2.7 million. Smith had 2.5 sacks last year in a situational role in playing 253 snaps off the bench, and he did that despite playing through a torn ligament in his foot. So I think a chance for even better production from him next season as part of that rotation at defensive end. One player who will not be joining the Seahawks that we discussed briefly last week, cornerback C.J. Smith, who they were going to trade for from Cleveland, but that trade was rescinded when he failed his physical.
R.I.P. to a Seahawks tenure. Burn your C.J. Smith jerseys.
We'll always have that week that C.J. Smith spent on the roster.
I still, just in general, looking at this free agency, I feel like this is the right approach. Just spending money in free agency is almost always the wrong approach. But we do have to talk about, for 1 second, a signing that did not happen for the Seahawks, but in the NFC West.
Duncan Sue going to the Rams because Russell Wilson in a past life did something very horrible. I don't know what it is. You did deserve this, but it was something really horrible.
So if I have to justify this, which I don't know if I do, is the difference between Duncan Sue and Robert Quinn that great? Like, taking Robert Quinn out of the equation and adding in Ndamukong Suh, does that change things that much for the Rams' defensive line? I feel like people get a little bit obsessed this time of year with, like, oh, the Rams' defense is going to be amazing.
I mean, the Rams' defense already was amazing.
Was it?
So, I mean, they were, like, third in DVOA, right? And they started kind of slowly, you know, with Wade Phillips taking over. I feel like probably in terms of weighted DVOA, they might have even been higher than, you know, where they finished overall. They might have even been higher than third in just straight up DVOA.
They rated eighth in weighted DVOA. So.
And sixth overall. So I guess
they're a good defense, but it feels like a lot of these changes are some players are gone, some players are in. Like, are they noticeably better necessarily?
I think they're definitely.
They're noticeably different.
I think they're noticeably better at cornerback.
We'll see.
I mean, I guess you can be skeptical of Aqib Talib's age, and then, you know, Marcus Peters' production is probably not as good as his interceptions would indicate, but they're still really good. And they're players that, you know, the Rams went out and targeted because they like their fit in Wade Phillips' scheme, as opposed to players that he just inherited from whatever it was the Rams were previously trying to do.
They had Aaron Donald. That's all that matters. To me, that's it. You have Aaron Donald, and that's all that matters.
But the point is, when you're double-teaming Aaron Donald, you can't also double-team Ndamukong Suh, who's been double-teamed throughout his career.
Same deal with Robert Quinn, though. Like, is Robert Quinn bad all of a sudden?
I mean, he was fine. And yes, as Bill Barnwell pointed out in his analysis of the trade, like, it would be better for the Rams if Suh were the same player but a defensive end, like the same caliber of player but a defensive end,
yes,
rather than a defensive tackle. But
it'd probably also be more expensive than $14 million.
The Robert Quinn trade already happened. Like, they were, it's not like that was contingent on them signing.
No, I mean, sure, yes, I understand that. I'm just saying that I feel like right now is the time of year where teams that are supposed to be good seem so good, right? Before the season, we marveled at what the Seahawks defensive line would look like, and their defensive line was kind of bad.
That's not untrue.
There was nobody on the Seahawks defensive line that was at the same caliber as Aaron Donald.
No, I would agree with that. Not individually, no. I mean, the other thing that could happen that came out after we last podcasted was the Football Outsiders adjusted games lost injury metrics, where the Rams were number one by a wide margin in the league in fewest games lost to injury last season. So that was a big part of their success. That's a place where regression to the mean is not going to work for them. And will work to some extent for the Seahawks, who were 22nd.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how much that has to do with average age.
Right.
But also, I mean, you know, the Rams probably got older. You know, Dominican Sue isn't young. I guess Robert Quinn's not necessarily young either, but adding Keeb Talib, Dominican Sue, like, these are like big names, but players who are getting older.
Also, all the players who remain on their roster a year older than last season.
Yeah.
It's math.
So, like, it's 53 more years.
Yep.
They're that much older, and they're not going to draft anybody. Anyway, I'm just saying that this...
Did they trade their second and third round picks? Oh, no, I broke you. I finally broke you.
I just feel like this isn't the time of year to panic about what the Rams' defensive line is going to look like. Like, will they be good?
No.
Will the Seahawks move the ball against the Rams?
But
they haven't ever.
Exactly. That's the point. You know what time of year is the appropriate time to panic about the Rams' defensive line? All the time. Literally all the time.
No matter what, the Seahawks couldn't move the ball against the Rams before Aaron Donald was there. It hasn't happened at any point as far as I remember. Maybe like when Torrey Holt was roaming the sidelines. Like I might remember some years when the Seahawks were new to the NFC West that they were pretty good against the Rams defense. But really, it just hasn't happened in the Pete Carroll era against St. Louis / LA.
Yeah, they can change cities. It just doesn't matter.
It's going to be the same.
And it's going to still be bad.
Yeah, it'll still be bad. All it was bad before. It's bad now. It'll always be bad.
An awfully nihilistic take.
They could probably get rid of Aaron Donald and it would still be bad.
You know, people have said the same about our podcast.
Including me.
But yet we've gone for 144 episodes.
What a milestone.
All right, on that note.
Well, thank you again, all the Third Pelton brothers, every single person who's listened to the podcast, who's responded to us on Twitter, who follows us on our brand new Instagram.
Yeah, which, by the way, we didn't mention, you should be checking out for all sorts of photos from that Spokane trip, and the tacos / burritos that we're eating in our search for Seattle's best. We'll be continuing to post those on Instagram. So follow us.
Everybody who's rated and reviewed the podcast on iTunes, the negative ones especially, we like those.
One. There was only... we can joke about the listener. That literally was only one.
Well, thank you so much for being along for this ride to 144.
And we hope to eventually make regression to the mean work for us. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.